Hi, I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Join me for a family business story today. A.E. Schmidt Billiards, Kirk and Rachel Schmidt, joining us in studio with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting as we tell the story of another great family business across the St. Louis region. That's the mission of the business of family business. This is a company that started 1850. What was the company looking like in 1850? Can I start with you, Kurt?
Sure. We were my great-great-grandfather immigrated over from Germany at that time, and he was an ivory turner. Mm-hmm. Opened up his shop down pretty much where the arch stands today, and he decided to a customer came in, wanted to see if he could turn an ivory cue ball. The business grew from there.
So he started with cue balls, but they weren't necessarily selling the tables at that point.
No, they weren't. That came a little bit later. Not much. You know, about 15 years later, his son joined the business and started bringing in, you know, manufacturer pool tables at that point.
So was St. Louis the destination for your grandfather, or was this something he was just passing through, saw all of the German immigrants and decided to stay?
Actually, he started off in Belleville.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised you even asked that question. That's a good one. He started off in Belleville and found out that the job market or economic prospects for him were better in St. Louis, mm-hmm. and that's when he moved on to the riverfront.
So were there a lot of other companies that were offering this, or was he one of the first ones?
I think there was other companies that were offering it. He had a huge amount of talent. Taking a chunk of ivory and turning that into a perfectly round sphere is something not everybody can do. It's a talent. And back even in those days, it was, you know, a tough thing to achieve because mm-hmm. there were no automated machines to do that. It was completely by hand.
So he had the tools and he just, how would you do that by hand?
Basically, you set up what's called a form jig inside a lathe. And believe it or not, you take chalk and water and get the ball semi-roughed out and it sticks in there and centrifugal force holds it in place while you turn it. And then you check it with a group of calipers to make sure you're accurate all the way through. You know, we haven't been in the ivory business for a long time, but I did try to turn an ivory cue ball at one time.
How did that go?
It was an egg. Not much use.
It's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's very difficult to do. And to make that perfectly round without the modern, you know, I don't know how they did it on an everyday basis.
Yeah. How long would it take to turn one?
From start to finish, there was a roughing out period that you had to rough it out. And ivory is a type of thing that that basically it has to season for a while, so you can't do it all in one crack. Mm-hmm. You have to take a turn off, put it away, come back 2 weeks later, take another turn, and it takes about 6 months to do it properly. So, you know, overall, you know, if you were to add up all the time back when that was the only thing the ball could be made out of was mm-hmm. ivory, there was no plastics. In fact, we'll get into that a little bit later, but those probably took, you know, a good, I'd say 4 hours a ball when you added all the cumulative time together mm-hmm. to make. But the plastic that people enjoy today actually came out of the billiard industry. They wanted to find a substitute for ivory, and there was a $10,000 award given to the first person who could develop a good substitute, mm-hmm. and John Wesley Hyatt came up with plastic. So plastic was kind of born out of the billiard industry.
What year would that have started?
That was about 1888.
I'm impressed your knowledge of the history, not only of your company, but the industry in general. Did you have a fascination with billiards your whole life?
I did, and I was kind of a nerdy person. I still am a nerdy person. So I, you know, have a big interest in studying this type of stuff, and I don't get out much.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I wanted to just throw that number, the 1850. When you look at some of the businesses that have been around in the St. Louis region, they have to be one of the oldest ones.
As far as I know, they would be the third oldest family business in continuous operation.
Wow.
There are two I'm aware of, one founded 1849, the year before, mm-hmm. and one founded in the 1830s. But in continuously operating in St. Louis, I think this is the third oldest.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable.
A.E. Schmidt, at the time, like let's say 1850 and maybe when you start to get to the late 1800s, was this something that people were putting into their homes or was this something you would see at like parlors and bars? Where would you see these tables?
Once again, you're right on the mark. The very few people, except for the very, very wealthy, had pool tables in their home. Mm-hmm. So you went to a bar or a tavern or an actual pool room, or the wealthier people called them conservatories, that you would go to play pool. And there was thousands of pool rooms just in St. Louis alone that had pool tables in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's towards the 20s and the 30s that happened. And, you know, around the 1960s, that's when it started getting fashionable to put them in homes, and that's when you started seeing more and more of them come into the house.
So it was your grandfather that we're talking about that was here in 1850?
No, it was a great-great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather. Right. So, yes, I guess that would work number-wise.
I'm the fifth, and my wife and I work in the business together.
Mm-hmm. And Rachel, what generation? You're the sixth generation?
I'm the sixth with my sister and my brother.
Great. How was you said great-great-grandfather at record-keeping?
There's a chalkboard down at work where I guess he was mad one day, and he wrote the messages with a nail into the chalkboard in German. You know, so I don't think he was a really good record keeper. I don't think that, you know, there have been generations of this company that have been really strong business-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, Stephanie, and Michael, my three kids, are going to be far better at that nor now than I ever would have been.
Yeah. I love hearing those stories, too, where you find some old receipts or something from companies that have been around for over 100 years. There has to be some things left over from the 1800s. If you have a chalkboard, I mean, that's something. Is there anything that transferred over? Because, obviously, you're not located on the arch anymore. You had to have moved at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
We have lots of memorabilia that we have down there at our shop now. Old tools, we have, you know, one letter that seems kind of funny now, congratulating us on our 50th year in business. came from the mayor of St. Louis at that time.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts of items that were worked on, examples of things that he built back in those days. Again, the ivory business is long gone. It should be. Good riddance. But there are things that remain from that period of time, and, you know, old cues, that type of stuff.
They're highly collectible. People will try to find things like that, and it's almost like if there were something on the market from that era, it would be bought up immediately, because anytime I see someone that has a collection at their home, they pride themselves on some of those older pieces of memorabilia.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we get calls on it. You know, one thing about being an old company is we get a lot of calls from people that, you know, what's this worth? How much can I get for this? And, you know, is it of any value? A lot of this stuff isn't valuable. You know, there's things that are out there that, you know, you'd be lucky to get $2 on Craigslist. But it's always the odd item out there that, you know, bring a lot of money.
When we come back, I wanted to hear a little bit of the history of billiards, how it's changed over the years. Maybe you'll be surprised to learn about what a table 150 years ago looked like. Our conversation continues with A.E. Schmidt Billiards, Kurt Rachel, and Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Next, here on the Business of Family Business. In studio today with Kurt and Rachel Schmidt from A.E. Schmidt Billiards, dating all the way back from 1850, a family-owned business that has a lot of great history in it. Also, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program, The Business of Family Business. If you have a family business in mind that has a great story, we would love to hear it. Reach out to Dan Bean at cmaconsulting.com. So has billiards always been green felt, six holes on a table? Is it always looked like that?
No, not at all. Billiard and snooker are two other forms of pool tables. Billiards was the original form of table sports.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, the game of billiards goes all the way back to Cleopatra's age, where they played it on the ground. But the original form was no pockets at all. Three balls, and you had to bank the cue ball or the white ball off three cushions and come back and hit two object balls on the rebound. It was a very geometric mathematical game, one that I find, you know, is worthy of eating light bulbs trying to play it. It's very, very difficult to play the original form of billiards.
Mm-hmm.
Around the 1870s, 1880s, six-pocket pool, or pocket billiards as it's known, came into existence. And it was easier.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody could play it. Everybody could be good if they, you know, tried. And that really took it on over from there. Very few people play billiards anymore, but if a billiard player ever comes up and he tells you he plays billiards, don't take him on a math quiz, because like I said, it's geometry.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask this question to you, Rachel, and we're hearing the history of A.E. Schmidt, and I wonder, too, is your fascination with billiards and the company as deep as Kurt's?
Probably not as deep as Kurt's, but I have interest in different parts of history than what he does. Like, I like to go back and look at the old designs of the tables and kind of pull off of that for future tables so you can bring something back like that. So
the designs, and also the designs of the glass where you put the lights over it. You see a lot of elaborate pieces that normally surround a billiard table, too. So what do you do at A.E. Schmidt?
Well, since it's a family business, we all kind of do a bunch of stuff. But my main stuff is I work on the social media marketing aspect of things. And then I design some of the tables. And then I also just do general office work and cutting cloth and stuff like that.
If there's a viral video of someone doing a trick shot at a tournament somewhere, is that something that you would share on social media?
Sometimes, but not all the time. I like to show our product on our social media.
Well, sure.
So, yeah.
So where are some places your products may have been seen? There has to be some areas where you walk in, and we've talked to other family businesses, like, for example, Winco Windows. The first thing they do is they check the windows to see, oh, I wonder if we did something here. Do you guys walk into a place, if you see a billiard table, you wonder, I wonder if we had something to do with that sitting here?
Yeah, of course. You know, you always get a little annoyed when it's not yours, but we are mainly known for being in Dave & Buster's all around the country for our tables.
That's a big client. Very big. So what would set you guys apart from other companies?
As far as United States manufacturers of pool tables, there's really only five or six left that build over 100 tables a year.
Really?
Back in the year 2000, there was 150. Mm-hmm. So over the, you know, evolution of, you know, both imported goods and also, you know, changes of taste, changes of things that happen, you know, the billiard industry has shrunk. Mm-hmm. And that is normal for this type of industry. It rises and lowers. My accountant says it has more mood swings than a 13-year-old. And it does. That's totally true. So first of all, there's only five or six of us left that build in the United States. That's number one. Number two, we are both custom, semi-custom, and kind of, you know, production. In other words, if you want a pool table that has elephants for legs, we can do it. If you want something that is just modified that we already make to your specifications, we can do that. Or if you want something that's just simplistic, that's right there, we have that as well. We feel that we build the strongest pool table in the country, and that's backed up by years of, you know, them being out there. St. Louis University High, one of the largest display centers of A. Schmidt pool tables in the country. They don't do it on purpose, but tables have accumulated there over the years. They probably have 30 or 40 that have been exposed to all the high school kids for the past 50, 60, 100 years, you know, that those things have been sitting there. The tables hold up. They last. And in this world today, we find that pretty refreshing that you can buy something. You don't need a service policy on it. You don't need an aftermarket thing. You're going to hand it down. And again, that might be passe thinking. Nobody really thinks like that anymore, but we do.
Do you deliver too?
Oh, yeah.
How many
same people that build them deliver them?
How many people does it take to get it to a basement? Like, how many people do you send for something like that?
Usually two.
Really? It's impressive too.
Yep. It's a 1,000-pound item. Now it all comes apart, but they bring it down in the basement, and there are some tables out there, some of the older ones that we built that, you know, tip the scales at almost 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
That takes more.
So you are Generation 5, Kurt. Rachel is Generation 6. Your dad, Kurt, was Generation 4?
That's correct.
But in terms of family analysis, the way we look at this, the dynamics are really Kurt is G1, more like a founder now, and G2 is Stephanie, her brother and sister, because they're all direct descendants of Kurt. Mm-hmm. The dynamics right now within the family, we would call them G1, G2 dynamics, parent and children, not G5 and G6, even though that is truly what they are.
Well, she's unsung hero there. There's actually five of us. My wife has been involved since the start with me down there. So she has worked down there for years and labored around and watched that happen. She stays low profile, but she's there. So when you say parent, please say parents.
When did you first become involved in AE Schmidt, and how old were you?
In a family business, basically you get involved almost from birth. You know, I can remember going down there at the age of, you know, 10 or 11 and doing, you know, cleaning and polishing glasses. At that time, they used to sell glassware along with the pool tables. You know, they got through the Depression that way.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't buying pool tables, so he sold restaurant supplies along with the pool tables to survive. You know, so all that stuff had to be cleaned up, and, you know, that was kind of the job going through it. Rachel, Stephanie, and Michael, my three kids, all have had the same thing. You know, you talk about child abuse today. I remember one day when the building flooded, and I have, you know, Rachel, who was all of 8 years old, with a squeegee brush down there at 2 o'clock in the morning getting the water out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Why I wasn't arrested, I don't know. But, you know, she was really tired the next day.
Was it a school night?
It was.
Oh, school night, too.
Yeah, they were a little late that day.
And you spent your entire life inside of the family business, or did you spend some time outside?
No, I spent my entire time there. You know, I started part-time, and then other than having a grass-cutting business on the side, I did that full-time. That was different from Rachel, my other three kids. I felt that the mistakes you learn, you know, going up are important, and I felt that was a mistake that I made.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel and Michael and Stephanie have all had outside jobs while they went to college, while they worked at AE Schmidt. So they had three things to do, so I wanted to make them workers.
Plus the squeegeeing, if you ever need it, so that could be an extra added bonus.
They can do it.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I wanted to ask you about family members that spend their entire career in a family business. Is that something that happens pretty often?
It happens less frequently now than it did in the past. Mm-hmm. And a lot of current generation want members of the next generation to work elsewhere to develop breadth mm-hmm. of exposure, to develop more perspective, to develop more credibility. But there are some people who know from an early age, this is my calling, mm-hmm. and it's in my blood, it's in my very being, and for them to go directly into the family business makes all the sense in the world.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, you heard Kurt mention about how you guys can do custom tables. What's popular right now, or what are some of those things people are requesting?
It's definitely transitional styling right now. The old carved leg is not in right now.
Really?
It's straight leg, plain as you can get, something that looks light and thin. Definitely right now, darker colors are in, finish-wise.
Darker colors meaning it's not necessarily a green top. Sometimes I'll see the tournaments and people post these things online. They'll be blue and different.
Yeah. So it'd be like for finish color, it's grays and blacks. But in terms of cloth, it's definitely navies, charcoals, light grays, that more contemporary looking.
I see. People also like the, instead of it having a system where the ball goes and there's like a little conveyor and it goes to one specific area, sometimes you see where it's the coin operated ones, they have to all go in one place and then you have to put the coins in and operate it. It seems like a lot of times you see a billiard table inside of a house, they love that cloth basket that holds it in the side. So is that popular too, or do you like to, or do more people like to see the whole elaborate system where it gets all the balls in one place?
Well, we actually don't do the ball return, so we just do the leather pockets that you were talking about.
They're one of the oldest continuous businesses in St. Louis. A.E. Schmidt Billiards will continue our conversation with them next, and I want to talk to them about some of those difficult years where the company may have struggled but came out ahead. Next on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. Hi, I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We're in studio today with one of the oldest St. Louis businesses around, A.E. Schmidt Billiards, founded in 1850. A lot has changed since then. We're joined in studio with Kurt and Rachel Schmidt, also Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. So let me ask this, Kurt, as you saw different trends in the industry over the years, you mentioned there was a couple of times, including during the Depression, where things were a little bit more difficult and you had to find more ways to get around that. What are some of those more difficult times in the billiard industry that you guys had to be resilient and be able to move past?
I've probably seen four mm-hmm. transitions when I was involved. I got involved... not making a political statement here at all. I got involved pretty much full time during the Carter years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when interest rates went up to about 20%. Nothing says buy a pool table like doubling your mortgage each month. And, you know, so it got very hard to sell anything. In fact, I remember robbing our soda machine to get money out for a COD one time through that. Sure. So, yeah, it's that was a bad time. And believe me, you know, all of us grieved during 9/11 for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But 9/11, nobody wanted to feel good. And that meant pool tables were totally out of the question.
Hmm.
So 2001 was a terrible year, both for this country and financial for people like me. You know, the interest was just not there. I remember people canceling orders right and left after 9/11 because they just didn't feel like celebrating anything
right.
or having anything fun to do. Bad period of time. Like I said, all the way around. I don't want that to be misconstrued that I was just thinking about money during that time. We all grieved with it.
Sure.
And of course, you know, the period of time where the banking crisis hit and this is a number that you might find amazing. In 2004, there was 350,000 slate pool tables built that year. By 2007, after the banking crisis, that dropped to 75,000.
Oh, wow. That's a huge drop.
That's a huge drop. And when I talked about the five companies that are left, a big chunk of them went during that. They just could not survive.
Wow.
You know, so that was, you know, pretty much disastrous until about 2011, until we started pulling out of it.
Mm.
And, you know, a family business that's done this, we can kind of sense when this is coming. We're really good economic barometers because the first thing that people stop buying in a bad economic time is a pool table.
Mm.
You know, so.
What would you credit for being one of the companies that lasted as opposed to some that couldn't weather that storm?
Oh, I think we love the business. I mean, you know, it's I see it in my three kids. I see it in my wife. I certainly saw it in my dad. I saw it in my brothers and sisters. Everybody is proud of the company. Everybody is part of our identity. And I don't think, you know, here you'll say great father and again, Kurt, but none of them want to be the generation to see this get dirt shoveled over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to see it survive. It's a fun business to operate on most days, unless telephone solicitors are calling.
That happens to everyone. No one's immune from that. Is there a billiard table in the White House?
There is.
Yeah.
There is. It's been there for years. It's an old antique. I really don't know who made it.
Mm-hmm.
Never been to the White House and haven't really seen photos of it. But there, you know, there's pool tables that, you know, just about everywhere.
Yeah.
Buckingham Palace. So we have one of them from there.
Buckingham Palace?
Yes, we have it. It's an old antique. The 6x12 that they play on over in England.
Really, how did you get that?
Oddly enough, do you remember the company Underwood Deviled Ham?
Mm-mm.
Well, I'll bet you do.
Yeah.
You know, so Dan remembers it. When they sold off to Pet Milk, they had a bunch of stuff rat-holed in the basement, and it came up for auction.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, you know, he was given this table. It came out of conservatory over in London. Or Buckingham Palace, wherever it was, and there was 12 of them in there.
Hmm.
And this thing dates back to, believe it or not, 1798.
Wow.
The lumber in it was taken out of a sunken ship. And in fact, when the Rolling Stones were coming to town, they would always request a table to be set up so they could play on it. I set it up 3 times for them to play when they came to St. Louis.
Is that so? They specifically request that.
They request that table.
What a thing to request!
It's it's not as easy of a job as you'd think to install that thing. It's, you know, again 6x12, which is basically you can fit 3 standard pool tables in that size.
Wow,
it's huge.
Where do you deliver it to? The stadium? And they?
It was at the stadium. Yeah.
What's the rental cost on that? How much would it cost to get that?
A lot of Rolling Stones tickets.
So you traded out for the enjoyment of the show.
There
well, I'm sure they got a lot.
Involved too,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, how about that?
They were so happy the last time that we did it that they gave me 35 tickets.
Aw, you have a good time at the show?
We did.
Yeah, good.
It's, well, they still can bring it on.
Have you ever acquired another organization, considering some of these other ones may be getting out, and you guys have lasted over the years?
Well, we don't typically acquire them. We acquire their merchandise.
Oh, okay.
When AMF Pool Tables closed their doors down in Bland, Missouri, we bought all their, you know, or the majority of their, you know, parts and progress and things like that. We're kind of known for doing things like that. And there's been several companies that we've done it, but we don't, obviously we don't have any interest in buying their name.
Yeah.
You know, we have our own name brand and that's what we work with. So, yeah, we'll buy machinery, we'll buy, you know, parts and progress and that type of things. But typically we only do it if they're distressed or out of business.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Rachel. If you can get the Rolling Stones, a picture of them playing on one of your pool tables, you think that would be good for social media?
Yeah, that would be a really good, good liker on there.
You're going to have to work that in next time when, when they come into town. You know, they're never going to stop touring, so next time they come in.
They would. They never allowed any photographs in there.
Really?
So, no, they
would
never
not.
Did. It was. We were not allowed in there. I had to have it done, get in, get out, and then once they were in, we had to get it right out of there.
Yeah. So how do you manufacture a pool table?
Start from scratch.
Yeah.
We get the raw lumber in. It gets planed, glued.
Where do you get your lumber from?
We actually get it right here in Missouri area. There's a company we buy from down in Poplar Bluff that supplies most of our lumber to us. The exotics we import from, you know, Brazil or South America or wherever you can get the lumber from. A lot of it is protected today, so you can't buy it. You know, but... old lumbers that used to be used in pool tables like rosewood and mahogany are now protected, so you can't even buy it anymore.
Mm.
You know, so.
Mahogany is protected.
It is protected.
Oh, okay. So that's another thing. Sometimes you see maybe the laws or regulations, or socially speaking with the ivory, for example, you make adaptations and you find different ways to keep the quality of the product up.
That's correct. But, you know, there's a lot of different woods that are out there. And, you know, wood's typically out of the rainforest, or you don't touch those anymore. Most of your woods today, the exotics, a lot of them come from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can really come from Belize. A lot of them come out of there. A lot of them come from, you know, different areas that you wouldn't suspect.
Mm-hmm. You know, part of this too is people ordered this. What's the time frame between someone gives you a call, they give you the specifications of what they're looking for, to the day that it's delivered? Normally, how long does that take?
That normally takes about 4 to 5 weeks.
Oh, that's fast.
Yep.
That seems really quick.
Mm-hmm.
How many people do you have working on the tables?
We have about 15 people in our factory, mm-hmm. and then we have five family members that work there. So, yeah.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, let me ask you about the manufacture process and what it means to manufacture to order.
So with manufacture to order means A.E. Schmidt does not begin to make a table until they have an order in hand. Some companies manufacture to inventory, meaning if the stock we have on the shelf hits a certain level, mm-hmm. we'll then manufacture so many units. But manufacture to order means the order comes in before we start making that unit.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to worry about unsold inventory, out-of-date inventory. The lead time does tend to be a little longer,
mm-hmm.
but when they're doing custom work, most everything is made to order if you're doing custom work.
We're joined one last time with one of St. Louis's oldest continuous businesses, A.E. Schmidt Billiards, dating all the way back to 1850. Kurt and Rachel Schmidt, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Welcome back. And one last time with A.E. Schmidt Billiards, with Kurt and Rachel Schmidt telling the great story of their billiard company dating all the way back to 1850. Does your facility smell like wood?
Well, we don't smell it, but every time we have a customer come in, they say they can smell the wood and the lacquer, so I think we're immune to it by now.
I love the smell of wood. There's something special about walking in and the smell of lumber or something like that. So the facility where you guys work out of, where are you guys located?
We're on 55 in Loughborough. We're on Kellen Avenue there. Mm.
I look at the way billiards and pool has been looked at in pop culture. So you have like a James Dean figure and they got them, they're smoking and everything's like, you know, really cool. Sometimes you see these things in pop culture. Does that help the image and does that help with sales when maybe there's like a scene in a movie that pops up? Do you ever see like an uptick in sales after something like that?
Absolutely. You definitely see that. And it's, I remember my dad was always trying to clean up the image of pool tables. Mm. You know, instead of calling it a pool table, he'd call it a billiard table. Instead of calling it a pool room, he'd call it a billiards hall, that type of thing. Always trying to clean up. In reality, people like that side of it, the seedier side of it. Mm. You know, that's what attracts them to them. We talked about the bad times. Let's talk about the good ones for a while. Mm-hmm. Paul Newman, the Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Business exploded. And then later on, Tom Cruise and Paul Newman linked together to do the sequel, Color of Money.
Mm.
Business went from like nothing to quadrupling overnight. So yes, the media has a lot to do with that. And it's, Rachel and I are both old film buffs, and all this time she had been seeing W.C. Fields with a crooked cue. She was, you know, and she thought it was a picture about pool, but it was really W.C. Fields that was involved there. So yeah, there's a lot of things that are associated with it. And every time it's advertised, it's, you know, it helps business.
Rachel, do you and your brother and sister get along?
Yeah, I say we get along for the most part. I mean, there's an occasional screaming at each other, but normally we don't stay mad at each other longer than a few hours. So
good working relationship.
Right.
You all have your different roles. Right. How did you guys settle on your roles?
Well, Michael came in and he immediately wanted to be in the factory. He had worked as a mechanic beforehand, and then he slowly came over to managing the factory. Mm-hmm. Stephanie came in next, and she picked up on sales just because she's naturally good at it. And then I was the last one to come in, so I kind of picked up where everyone was lacking, but then I also found what I enjoyed doing. And it just so happened that we all kind of liked different areas, so it worked out really well for us.
How about that, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, finding the right area to go to? It seemed like it happened naturally. I know a lot of family businesses, sometimes they struggle because they both want the same position. It sounds like they found what was right for them.
You know, when you build to your strengths, work is less like work and more like fun. So what Kurt can be really thankful for is he has three children active in the business, and they all gravitate to something different that is still mission critical for the business. So things worked out really, really well by nature, and sometimes that happens, and this is one of those times where it happened.
Well, and the other thing I'd add to that, which is on the Pride Parade as well, is that I can honestly say one of the reasons that they get along really well is because all three of them work equally hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big deal, because in most families you find that, you know, maybe one will be outworking the other one by twice as much, and that creates friction. But that isn't the case here.
You're really proud of that.
I am. Totally.
So, Rachel, one of the things you find that the factories and the showrooms sometimes are connected, sometimes they're not, sometimes it's off-site. What's your guys' setup, and really, what's the experience when a customer walks in?
So we have our factory on 55 in Loughborough, and then we just renovated the front half of it to be our retail showroom and our office. The main reason we did that now is that since retail's somewhat in a dying phase at the moment, we really need to have an interactive experience with our customers. So the great thing about our showroom is you come down there, you get to pick out all your options on the table, and then you can actually see the tables being made. We're still open Monday through Saturday, like a normal retail showroom, but it's just connected to a factory.
So you can observe if you really wanted to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of cool. Do people enjoy doing that?
Yeah, a lot of people like to get back there and, you know, take a look and see what's actually going on. Because when we had our retail showroom in Manchester, we had a hard time conveying to people that they were actually built here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So now that they're actually seeing it, smelling it, like we talked about earlier, it really hits the experience for them.
My kid's 4. He loves watching the old Mr. Rogers. And his favorite portion of it is when they take the camera crew to some location. It shows them how things are made. He would love seeing that. We talk a lot about what's going on. You said that your wife has been involved from the very beginning. What type of things does she do inside A. E. Schmidt?
Well, there's a lot of things that she's done. For years, she worked in the retail showrooms. She, like Rachel, has cut cloth. She's actually sanded pool tables. She's helped me build them. You know, in lean times, she was back in the factory. In lean times, she did all the hard things that a person can do. I remember going up to New Hampshire one time. You know, we were supposed to have help up there. She actually helped me lift the slate and move it in there. That particular time, she was very tiny. She 100 pounds. Mm. You know, so, you know, she's given her all to this business as well. Done a great job. Kind of an unsung hero. I don't know if she would have married me if she knew what she was getting into. but she, shortly thereafter, she was involved with it.
You know, Rachel, if people wanted to see what you're doing on social media, see some of the photos or really interact with you, what are some of the places they can go and check you guys out?
We're most active on Facebook and Instagram. Those would be our two big ones.
Yeah. Just search A.E. Schmidt and you'll be able to find it from there.
Yeah. A.E. Schmidt Billiards.
Yeah. And then once they search that out, of course, they can come in and check out the showroom, which sounds really awesome. What's your guys' website address?
www.aeschmidtbilliards.com.
Perfect. Well, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, you heard a great story here starting back in 1850 all the way till today. What are some of your impressions?
This is an amazing story of a family business that spans 169-year history. Truly amazing. G5 in control, Kurt, although he said maybe he's not, maybe G6 is, his three children. The fact that those three children get along so well is really great to hear. This business has dealt with I don't know how many industry changes and just challenges to any business. When you consider that fewer than 20 years ago, there's 150 companies like them, and now they're one of three major companies doing this, they are truly a survivor.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is. So Kurt and Rachel, A.E. Schmidt Billiards, thank you so much for coming in, telling your story here on The Business of Family Business.
Yeah, I knew there was five, but I went with three major.
Well, thanks for having us. It's, both Rachel and I really appreciate it, as well as Stephanie, Michael, and Karen. We all thank you for the opportunity and appreciate it.